Luke chapter 10, verses 25 to 28. And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live."
Good evening, church. How are we feeling tonight? Oh, wow. You guys always exceed my expectations. Usually get a groan. It's really hot outside. It's humid. You know, we're kind of uncomfortable that we had to walk back outside. But I, for one, can tell you I'm excited to be with you guys this evening. We're going to do what I call a branching lesson. And I tried to kind of leave a little hook in there this morning as we were talking about, you know, being a neighbor and adding value and finding ways to really make impacts on people and what that means in relation to discipleship. And I mentioned this proverb and I mentioned this parable that we're going to be digging into tonight. And on surface value, it looks pretty tame, but I'm hoping that we can turn upside down maybe the way that we've looked at this for a while. I know it's been turned upside down for me. So what were we talking about this morning? We were talking about how is it that we as disciples and aspiring to make other disciples and aspiring to make a positive impact on the world around us, how can we actually do that? And we talked about going out of our way to meet needs of people around us. We talked about behaving in such a way that's so radically different from what people are used to that it fosters, engenders, provokes, necessitates the question, what is that person on? What is their life about? I don't understand why everybody else in Walmart is cranky, but this person pretends like they like all of these people that are around them right now. This person always puts their buggy back. I've never met one successful person that doesn't put their buggy back. Do you put your buggies back? Good people. See? My kind of folks. Anyway, we're talking about that, and I got some really good feedback after the lesson this morning as people were filtering out, because the obvious question that comes from the sort of things we discussed this morning is, well, I know I gotta love my neighbor, but who is my neighbor? Exactly how far does that extend? Now, Marcus, you were talking a lot about guys that might be panhandling or begging on the side of the road or people that are destitute or poor, but what if they're that way because they were irresponsible? What if they're that way because they brought it on themselves? Or even worse, what if they're con artists and they're just out there taking advantage of good people? Certainly, they don't count as my neighbor, do they? I can just pass right by those folks, right? Well, enter this interaction between a lawyer, a scholar of the law, and Jesus in Luke chapter 10. And it's really interesting because just before this happens, Jesus had sent his disciples out. He sent the 72, according to Luke, and they had gone out and they had preached the news that the kingdom was at hand, telling people to repent, and they had great success. And so we saw one variable of being a disciple, and that is to be spreading the good news verbally and telling people the good news. And then Jesus tells this parable, this story, in response to this question that shows us how we can preach the gospel without a word. And that is sometimes even more impactful. Anyone ever invited somebody to church and just got the cold shoulder? If you're saying no, well, we have to talk later. There's going to be an invitation song. You can come up, because I'm just kidding. But have you ever actually met a real need of somebody and gotten the cold shoulder? I mean, really reached in sacrificially? Broke through the defenses and not had a chance to have a real conversation with them? No. So let's read through this and see what Jesus does with this. It says, "Behold, a lawyer stood up and put him to the test, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?'" This is an important question. This is what we are asking. This is what we as disciples claim to have the answer to. He said to him, "What is written in the law, and how do you read it?" I love that Jesus turns this on him and he says, "Hey, how do you interpret it?" He's really asking, "Hey, when you read the law and all that is in it, what's the main idea? What's the main thrust of this?" Because as we know, the Mosaic Law, 600 plus different commands. So he's really saying, "Why don't you tell me what the main thrust of the entire law is?" He says, "How do you read it?" And this lawyer answered and said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." He probably didn't say it that fast, but he said that. And he said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." It's pretty cut and dry, right? Sounds pretty simple. But watch what happens in the narrative. But he, the lawyer, in verse 29, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" You have to ask yourself this question right now. Why did he feel the need to justify himself? What is so burdensome about the two commands that he just recited that this man felt the need to add a word and de-escalate the situation and get Jesus to be more realistic? What is it about those commands? We're going to talk about that for a few minutes tonight. And Jesus responds in this way with the story about the Good Samaritan, one that's very familiar to us, and we want to unpack it tonight because it's going to help us make an impact on the community around us. It's going to change the way we see the people that we're surrounded with. It's going to give us a paradigm shift that is going to be necessary if we're going to get where we want to go. It says, "A man going down from Jerusalem to Jericho fell among robbers who stripped him, beat him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, he passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had," what's that word that we talked about a lot this morning? "He had compassion on him." That is the key to this whole thing. "He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him." In verse 35, "The next day he took out 2 denarii and he gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back.'" And then Jesus asks, "Which of these 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" And the lawyer said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "You go and do likewise." Let's dig a little bit. Here's a religious scholar, and he is coming to test Jesus as the Pharisees and the scribes and the teachers of the law often did. He's here to test Jesus because Jesus does some things that are really nonconformist to the way that they saw someone who was holy and righteous. Jesus was always surrounding himself with sinners, and there might have been this sneaky suspicion that this Jesus guy really doesn't respect the law. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to go test him, and we're going to ask him, "What do I have to do to be saved?" And he might have been expecting Jesus to be really, really wonky and just say, "You know what, just love God and it'll all be okay. You know, there are many paths to God. Just love God. Just be a good person. Just live by the golden rule and it'll be okay." And he would have exposed Jesus as a phony and not someone that really respected the law. But Jesus' answer to him, and this is a note for any of us who get asked a question where someone's trying to trap us, respond with a good and thought-provoking question and you can find out what the person is really after, as Jesus does here. He tries to trap Jesus, but Jesus traps him by asking him, "What's in the law and how do you read it?" Jesus asks him for a summary, basically, of what the law means. And he gets the typical answer in verse 27, as we talked about before already. Now, the first thing about this is that it says, "Love the Lord your God with all of your soul, your strength, your mind, everything that you have." If that's not daunting enough, it's not the end of it. Because which of us actually loves God as much as we actually should with every fiber of our being? Here's what this means. It means that you love God so much that that is your default. That when things are good, that is your default place to rest. And when things are bad, that is your default place to rest. When your mind is not occupied by anything else, where is it resting? Is it resting on God, your Creator, the one who gave you life, the one who has done so much for you? Do any of us live like that all the time? No. So this is incredibly difficult. This lawyer that asks Jesus this question needs to de-escalate because the answer that he gets is impossible to live by. And if that weren't enough, here he goes with the second part, saying, "Love your neighbor as yourself." What does that mean? Let me ask you as Jesus, how do you interpret that, church? What's it mean to love your neighbor as yourself? What's it mean to live by the golden rule? I see some faces. Yeah, help someone the way you would like to be helped. That's the golden rule. We come by that in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. He talks about that. But if you really love your neighbor as you love yourself, this means that you would have to be seeking to meet the needs of your neighbor with the same kind of ferocity, determination, cleverness, strength, and energy that you try to meet your own needs. Do you do that? Is it possible to do that? Yeah, it is. But do we live this way every day? Does anybody So the first test was to love God. The second test was to love your neighbor like that. And, you know, if you were a Jew like this lawyer and you were keeping the Mosaic law and you were going down the list of saying, I do this and I do this and I do this and I especially do this better than other people and I believe in the resurrection, those Sadducees, they're heretics and I'm better than this people, I'm better than this people. And I keep all of these laws. And as Mike talked about, I have bigger tassels than everybody and I've got big phylacteries and I'm keeping the law better than anyone else. Really quickly, you could start to feel pretty good about yourself. But when Jesus comes and says, no, 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 I don't want you to tell me what the law says. I want you to tell me what the law is after. I want to know the heart of the law. I want to know the character. I want to know the fabric of what it calls you to be, not what it tells you to do. And what's the response of this lawyer when he sees and picks up on what Jesus is doing? Jesus, I think you need to be realistic. Certainly, you can't mean that everybody is my neighbor, right? That is impossible. Not everybody's my neighbor. I don't even like most of these people. Most of these people don't even care about themselves. How can I care about them? You can't help people that don't want to be helped. So, Jesus, who's my neighbor? I need to de-escalate the situation because what I've gotten myself into is a situation where I am called now and bound to live by something that I can't possibly ever live up to. And seeking to justify himself, he's looking to narrow the field. And I want you guys to key on this with me tonight. What he's really asking Jesus to do when he says, who's my neighbor? He is saying, what is the least, the most basic minimum requirement for fulfilling this commandment? Who's my neighbor? What is the least I have to do in order to be in line with this commandment and to fulfill it? And Jesus says, in typical Jesus awesome teacher fashion, that reminds me of a story, Mr. Lawyer Man. And he tells him this parable of the Good Samaritan. Okay? So, let's take a look at the parable and what it teaches. This is story time with Jesus. This parable is something that has turned my paradigm upside down a little bit because here's what we have. We have a hero in this story. We have the protagonist who is exactly what we were getting out this morning. We have an individual who meets human needs with great sacrifice. He meets the emotional needs of the man who falls under robbers. He meets the physical needs. He meets the financial needs. He does so without expecting anything in return. And he does so knowing that it might even require more of him. And it's a great story, but we have to keep in mind that this story is not isolated. It is an answer to a very specific question. And the question was, what does it really mean to love your neighbor as yourself? What is the basic minimum? What is the heart of this commandment on which half of the law and prophets hangs? What does this really mean? You see, the answer from Jesus was to meet needs of people all around you, to add value to people all around you who don't even believe what you believe, which is a little bit surprising to us. I agree. To meet needs of people that don't even necessarily believe what we believe. And this sounds scandalous, but he intentionally paints this story between an Israelite and a Samaritan who have two different religions, and not only do they have different religions, they have racial tension between each other, they hate each other, and both sides think the other side is blasphemous. So if he was telling this story to us today, it might not be about a Samaritan, it might be about someone who is a Muslim. Maybe even a radical Muslim. Jesus paints this story between two people that do not like each other. So the lawyer says, give me the bare basic minimum. And Jesus says, the core of what it means to be a disciple of mine, the heart of what it means to love your neighbor, is feeding, caring for, and protecting helpless people around you, no matter where they're from, no matter what they believe, and no matter what you feel about them. Isn't that scandalous? Think about how hard that is to swallow, even for us right now, in this room, together, when we kind of say that we live by that sort of principle, but just think about it. Think about what that would actually mean. Do you really feel compelled to meet the needs of someone who would be a part of Al-Qaeda? Do you really feel compelled to meet the needs of someone who you know misappropriates, disrespects, and misuses resources that others have bent over backwards to give them? Do you really feel the needs to feel compelled to meet the needs of someone from a different political party and their country is in the shape that it is because they were irresponsible with their vote and they're getting what they deserve? Do you really feel compelled to do that? Because Jesus is saying you ought to feel compelled to do that. And if you don't believe that, you can go to Matthew chapter 25 and read verses 31 through 40 when it talks about him coming to separate the sheep from the goats. And what does he tie this to? He ties this to acts of service. It's where Jesus says, I was in prison and you never visited me. It's that passage right there. We don't have time to go into it tonight, but Jesus says that a life poured out in deeds of compassion, in acts of helping and adding value to people around you that are not like you is a sure sign that you have met Jesus face to face. Okay, let's see how the lawyer tries to get through this, okay? He tries to limit these commands by asking this question, who is my neighbor? And we try to limit this command by asking the question, who is my neighbor? And with the example that we had this morning and guys begging on the side of the street, it's really easy for us to think about how easy we start to entertain thought processes that would limit who really is our neighbor in those situations, don't we? It's okay to be honest about this. This is human nature, right? It's natural to want to give and help people who are like you and who like you and who you like. It's easy to help those people. We have not one pause or hesitation of giving to the Churches of Christ Disaster Relief Fund when there is a natural disaster and there are people, members of the church, who are in need. Not one hesitation. But it's different when it's not a situation like that. Jesus shoots this through by putting a Jew and a Samaritan in the story. He's saying anybody in need is your neighbor. Anybody in need is our neighbor. This hero in the story, the Samaritan, reaches past racial bounds. He reaches past religious bounds. He reaches past physical danger, as I'll talk about in just a second. Jesus is saying you can't limit who you're going to love as your neighbor. You don't get to limit the who. Jesus says, love your neighbor. We also try to limit when. And these are some of the conversations that we had after this morning as we talked about this and we chewed on this, right? We might say something like, look, there's a certain kind of people I don't mind helping, but these folks are reckless and irresponsible and lazy. Well, I don't have to help them if they're in this problem because of their own actions, right? That's what we say. But when the Samaritan sees this guy dying, I want you guys to remember that they didn't live in the same kind of society that we live in. We're very individualistic in America. It's all about us individually. We tend not to appropriate and imbue entire people groups with one person's actions. But back then, if you were a Samaritan, you were just like all the other Samaritans. And if you were a Jew, you were just like all the other Jews. And they very much were not individualistic. They were very partisan, you can say. And so when this Samaritan looks and sees this Jew that's beat up, he very well would have looked at him and said, he deserves what he's getting. Because how many of us have they jumped and robbed? And that might seem kind of crazy to you, but we fall into that sometimes too, do we not? How many times do we call for war so people can get what they deserve, civilian or not? How many times do we fall into that same mindset? This is not foreign to us today. And so we have a Samaritan there who surely would have thought this person laying here bleeding on the side of the road is getting what he deserves. And the Samaritan would have absolutely thought this guy deserves what he's getting. That's how it was. But Jesus is using his own social context and the way things were in that day to say, no, that also doesn't limit who your neighbor is. Do you see how Jesus is breaking down barrier after barrier after barrier that stands between this lawyer and feeling like he has a mandate to help somebody else, to reach out and meet someone's needs? What if we say we will help people only when they are truly poor? When they are truly destitute and things are really, really bad off, I will help then. But until then, I don't have a responsibility to help. Well, that betrays the second part of this commandment, love your neighbor as yourself, because hopefully you don't wait until you are homeless and destitute before you decide to do something about your own situation. Now, do you? So if we apply that methodology to when we're willing to help somebody, we're not upholding that command of loving our neighbor as ourself. We should be meeting the need before they reach that place. Because we would hopefully meet that need for ourselves before we reach that place. What about, well, they brought it on themselves. I don't have to help them if it's their own fault. Well, Christ looked down and he saved you from all of your mess and all of your sin when you're every bit as responsible for that. No one else is. So we ought to live like Christ lived, right? So none of these excuses and conjectures and suggestions that we have about how we can limit who is our neighbor actually stands up in the face of these two commands. Are you getting what I'm saying? Jesus is dismantling all the reasons why we might rule someone out as not worthy or deserving of our help or time or care or consideration. He's throwing them out the window. This is why the lawyer says, "Who's my neighbor?" Wait, Jesus, this is crazy. He probably had a look like some of you guys have right now. What in the world? This is radical. Okay. What about I can't afford to? I can't afford to help. Have you ever felt like that? You really just wanted to help, but you didn't feel like you could afford to? Or it might put you in jeopardy? Jesus also defeats that through this parable. You want to know why? Because he sets it at a very specific place. He says he's on a road between Jerusalem and Jericho. Now, there's a road between Jerusalem and Jericho that's very specific. It's called the Pass of Blood. So many people have been jumped and robbed there that it's named the Pass of Blood. And Jesus frames this story in that particular location. This means that this Samaritan who goes down to help this Israelite bleeding on the side of the road does so at great risk of his own life. How do I know that? Because the Israelite is still alive. And if the Israelite is still alive, the people who jumped him are probably not that far away. That means he is very literally putting his own life in jeopardy, which you cannot afford to do, to go and help this man. Everything about this parable attacks all of the reasons why we would say that we are justified not to reach out and help somebody. Does it not? When we say, "I can't afford to give," it means not without burdening myself or making a big sacrifice. And Jesus seems to be saying in this story, yes, that's exactly what I mean. Loving your neighbor means helping people who you usually hate the sight of to such an extent that you actually share in some of their burden. I heard an old minister friend put it that way, and I think that's a great way to put it. Okay, so let's tie this up in a nice little bow after Jesus has defeated all of our thoughts about who we can help and when we can help and when it's appropriate not to, just like he did for this lawyer. You will say, "Marcus, nobody lives like this." And I will say that's correct. Nobody actually does. There are only really two options to try and get people to do and behave in this sort of way. And one way is the way that most people try. Now, we'll call it the compulsory way. There's a secular idea out there, there's a worldly idea out there that you ought to care about justice because that's what makes you a good person. You ought to help other people because you are enlightened, right? You ought to help other people because that's what good people do. And therefore, you have so much, and we have so much in this country, and these other people don't have very much, so you should feel bad about it. And since you feel bad about it, you should give and you should help, and then you won't feel bad about it anymore. That's one way. It's the only way for someone who isn't a Christian, honestly. Then there's a way that all religions teach, and we could wave the Bible around and say, because the Bible commands you to give to the poor, you do that. And if you don't do that, you should feel bad because you're not being a good Christian. And those are laws, and people could do that out of guilt. But that's not what Jesus is asking us to do in this parable, is it? Jesus intentionally puts a Levite and a priest in this parable who are two very moral people, very ethical people, religious people. And actually, the priests and the Levites were in charge of giving out the alms that were donated to the poor. So he puts two moral, ethical people who ordinarily their job is to give to people in need, who pass by on the other side when it comes to them having to put themselves in jeopardy or sacrifice a little bit in order to help this person. He is showing us that giving for that reason can only get us so far. Do you see what I was talking about this morning? The why really matters. Because if you're doing it out of guilt, if you're doing it out of obligation, it can't get you to where Jesus wants you to get. It can't get you to be in a place where you'll sacrificially give. It can't get you to a place where you will love somebody who ordinarily you would despise and not want to see coming. Because it didn't for the Levite and it didn't for the priest. Knowing what we know about the setting of where this man went down, they made the smart decision. The robbers are probably still close by, and we better just go by the other side because if we go over there, who knows what might happen. So we let one of our own bleed out on the side of the road. You ever driven through a rough part of town? You ever considered running a stop sign in a rough part of town? You ever been there? Light is yellow and you're usually really cautious, but hey, I don't like the way this looks. It was nice, and all of a sudden there are bars and chains on everything, and the sun is going down, and I don't know if I want to get caught here. And if you've ever been in that situation, you can't look too far down your nose at this priest and this Levite, because we've all made business decisions just like that. But Jesus puts these two who out of duty ordinarily help the poor, but when it comes to costing them something, they pass by on the side. Jesus says morality can only take you a little way, but it won't change your life. I think one of the things that would be really beneficial for us to look at tonight before we finish is what I call the key. If you feel guilty tonight about our lack of outreach or your lack of outreach or impacting people around us, I just want to say that's not Jesus' aim in this parable. You don't have to feel bad. He's just trying to show you that that sort of guilt that you're feeling right now is never going to get you to where he wants you to get anyway. So here's the key. Let's think about just for a second where Jesus puts the lawyer in the story. How do you read this parable, church? When you read this parable, it's easy for us to see ourselves as we're supposed to be the Samaritan, right? That's how I've always read it. I'm supposed to be the Samaritan. And we're really kind of removed from how bad that would feel if you were a Jew, right? Because that doesn't really mean anything to us. Okay, the Jews hated these guys, but, you know, we're all pretty much Gentiles in here, so what's the big deal? But I want you to think about who's asking the question. A Jew, a scribe, a lawyer. Where does Jesus put the Israelite in the story? He doesn't put him on the steed. He doesn't put him in the saddle. What if Jesus told the story like this? What if it was the Jew who saved the Samaritan? What if Jesus would have said, you know, you're riding along on your way between Jerusalem and Jericho, and you see a Samaritan. He saw a Samaritan off by the side, and the Jew stopped, and he went out of his way, and he decided not to be a racist, and he decided not to hate him because he was from a different religion, and he decided he was going to go above and beyond, and he bound up his wounds, and he anointed him with oil, even though that dirty savage didn't know the significance of that religiously, and he took him to the inn, and he paid for him, and he told the inn owner that he would pay for any more that he need, and that good Jew helped that Samaritan that day, and he broke down all of those borders, all of those walls. You know what he would be saying, what he would be teaching if he told the story that way? He'd just be giving him another rule. He'd just be giving him some more obligations to follow. He'd just be tacking on some more laws on top of the 600 plus. But Jesus doesn't tell the story that way because why? He knows that won't change the lawyer's heart. He knows that won't change the lawyer's why. So, he sets up the loser, the blasphemer, the oppressor, the dog, the Samaritan as the person who is coming to help the lawyer who is bleeding out in the road. It's the Jew that has been beaten and left for dead on the side of the road. It's the Jew whose own people have passed him by. So Jesus puts the Israelite in the road and the Samaritan in the saddle, and he is asking this lawyer with this story, the lawyer who asks, who is my neighbor? He's asking this lawyer, what if you were in the road? What if you were bleeding out? What if you had been beaten to a bloody pulp? What if you watched people that you trusted and were supposed to care for you pass by on the other side? What if you were beyond all hope of being saved? What if you thought this was it? What if you were laying there, having everything unjustly taken from you? What if you were being passed by and your only hope was an act of free grace from someone that doesn't owe you anything? What if your only hope was an act of free grace from someone who actually has every right to be your enemy? Would you want it then? Would you want a Samaritan then? Would you want a friend then? If Jesus said you're in the saddle and you broke across those barriers, he's just going to be giving him another rule. But he didn't. He's not giving him a rule. He's giving him a paradigm shift. Do you see what Jesus is doing? Jesus isn't telling him you just need to go do these things because this is the right thing to do and this is how you inherit eternal life. He's trying to show him the meaning and the heart of what it means to love your neighbor. He says, what if you were on the ground and had to experience a radical grace from someone who should have rejected you? Only then could you get up and look at the world around you and the people who you usually despise and the people who are irresponsible and the people who deserve it and the people who are lazy and the people who aren't as good as you. Only then could you get up and look at the world around you and say, but I was just like them. And somebody who wasn't supposed to, who didn't have to, who should have rejected me, loved me. Now you see the world with different eyes. He's telling this lawyer, put yourself on the road with the Samaritan who should hate you, who comes and bails you out. I love what Jesus is doing here. He's flipping the script on him. That's what would get rid of pride that allows you to look down at other people. You won't ever love your neighbor until you understand that you have been loved this way. You see, the beginning of this exchange between the lawyer and Jesus asked the question, who is my neighbor? And by the time we're finished, Jesus is essentially asking the lawyer, who was a neighbor to you? See what he's done? He's changed the question. And what's funny about this lawyer is he can't even get it out of his mouth to say the Samaritan at the end, right? Who was a neighbor to this one? Who of the three was a neighbor? And his response is the one who showed mercy. That's all he can bring himself to say. It's twisting up his mind so badly. You see, of course there are rules. Don't steal. Don't be a racist. Don't be selfish. Don't do anything from selfish ambition from our scripture this morning. But Jesus wasn't giving us a rule with this parable. He was trying to change our hearts. He was trying to give us a new lens to see the world around us through. And the gospel is this. The gospel essentially is this, that we are all like this lawyer, and we look at him and we say, seeking to justify himself. That's kind of crazy. Why would he do that? He's talking to Jesus, the man, the myth, the legend himself. But the gospel is that we're all really self-justifiers, isn't it? It's that whatever we set our hearts on really controls us. And there are people, even if you aren't this way now, at some point, something ruled your life. You bowed down to something. You bowed down to your occupation. You bowed down to acceptance. You bowed down to money. You bowed down to power. You bowed down to all sorts of things. And eventually you found yourself empty and bleeding and dying on the side of the road with nobody there to help you because it's a never-ending, empty, unfulfilling quest. We've all been self-justifiers. We're all self-justifiers. And the point of this parable from Jesus to this lawyer and from Jesus to us is that Jesus came down and found us in the pass of blood on the road, beat up, bloody, bruised, half dead, trying to justify ourselves. And he owed us nothing. He had every right to reject us. The enmity between God and man was there for a reason, and yet he picks us up. Our righteousness is of him. He puts us on his saddle, in his place, and he trots us into the inn, the one we talk about that has many mansions. And he puts us in a place we don't deserve, of no good of our own. And he came and picked us up off that road. I would say, church, until you understand that this parable is about you laying in the road, you will never approach someone laying in the road and give the love that Jesus has already shown to you. This parable is not about you being the Good Samaritan and getting a rule to go out there and do good and don't do this and do this. This parable is about changing the way you see the world around you. Because once you have been loved like that, you can give love like that. And I have good news. Jesus loved you like that. This Samaritan thought about the man and had compassion. This Samaritan came near and made contact with him. It is possible for us to be geographical neighbors in this community and not actually love them. But I want to read and close tonight on something that a Roman emperor named Julian wrote about the early church. He was writing in reference to how the early church was loving people that were radically different from them and shared nothing in common with them. He wrote this. He said, atheism, it's funny because they used to call Christians atheists because we didn't believe in all of the Roman and Greek gods. He said, atheists, through loving service rendered to strangers and through their care and for burial of the dead, it is a scandal that there is not a single Jew who is a beggar, and that the godless Galileans care not only for their own poor, but for ours as well, while those who belong to us look in vain for the help that we should render them. This is a Roman emperor saying that our Greek and Roman religion is not doing what the Christian religion is doing. our own people are being blessed and served and their needs are being met by these godless Galileans. These atheists are doing a better job taking care of our own people, and we are losing people. They are being converted because of how they are rendering loving service to strangers. Isn't that incredible? You wonder how the New Testament church turned the world upside down? The same way we will today. Rendering loving service one heart at a time to people that believe different than us, to people that we usually despise. But when we look and see them on the road bleeding, we remember that that's exactly where we were. And someone who we didn't deserve came and took us out of it. So whether we believe they deserve it or not, let us love our neighbor, not just as we love ourselves, but with the new commandment that Christ gave, as he has loved us. Love one another as I have loved you. And that makes all the difference. If you are here this evening and we can serve you in any way, we'd love to pray with you. We'd love to introduce you to Jesus. We'd love to help you have that paradigm shift. We'd love to help you become a disciple who adds value to other people and makes disciples. Please come.